6 minutes after the hour of 12 noon Central Time, Monday, August 15, 2022. Welcome to the Power Hour, hour number two with Dave Prier. We appreciate you joining us again because, you know, we always have controversial subject matter we talk about. Of course, the end of summer sale at the Power Mall is going on right now while supplies last. You can get 10, 15, or 20% off depending on how much you spend. No need to put in a code at checkout. The stuff's already there. Sale is on all the current items in stock while supplies last. Drop ship products excluded from sale. And you got 16 more days to act, so don't wait until the last minute. Get all those natural supplements while you can. The one thing I do want to mention, apparently the Power Mall, we get a lot of interesting calls over there, Power Hour J. She is so good about helping you process orders and stuff. And people want to get in conversation, which is a good thing, and they're asking questions. One of the questions that I just got texted, this is how fast we are. You know, my producers, the Power Mall, we're all in communication with each other during the show. And they were asking me, while I was building a home, somebody wanted to know what I built my house out of, and it's steel SIP panels. And SIPS stands for Structural Insulated Panel Systems. There is a website you can go to for more information called shopaffordablehomesplural.com. And that will introduce you to steel SIP panels, and you can see exactly how the house is put together. The house I'm living in right now, which is a barn dominium, went up complete with doors and windows in 16 days on the slab. So just to let you know, these things are very energy efficient, like living in a walk-in cooler. So, and they're also hurricane resistant category 5, 2-hour fire rating. I mean, there's a lot of pluses to this kind of construction, besides the fact that lumber prices keep going up like everything else. We haven't taken that big of a hit in the steel prices anyway, but we'll move on to another category here because I don't want to deny our guest his due here on the radio. It's one of the reasons why we invite medical professionals here is to toss out various ideas for you to ruminate on. And of course, there was a virus before COVID. Zika, remember that? And of course, there were a lot of different things that brought shock, fear, and panic throughout the tropics, especially in Brazil, parts of South America, all because of that pesky little skeeter. And so, you know, you got to wonder. They told millions of women, you know, if you're going to get pregnant or you want to get pregnant, don't, because this thing could wreck your pregnancy. And so women put away, you know, doing it. They didn't do it. And gee, what a great population control mechanism that is, because see, by the time they get out of childbearing age, the threat's over. Isn't that wonderful? Randy Bach, Dr. Randy Bach. He has a website, randybock.com. Randy Bach, if you want to look him up. He's got stuff on YouTube as well. He's got a book out called Overturning Zika, the Pandemic That Never Was. I mean, we're talking about credentials like biomedical device consultant for Ablacor Medical Corporation, chairman of Gain Street, Cambridge Innovation Center, Oro, animation game development in Boston, medical director for Randall Bach, MD, PC Medical Treatment Center of Revere, Massachusetts, project developer, Light Alert Concussion Awareness Helmet Add-on, entrepreneur, startup venture, Palunity LLC, and a physician medical director of the Danvers Office, education, University of Rochester School of Medicine and Dentistry, and Yale University BS in Chemistry and Physics. So, I mean, he's got the credentials. So now we're having this conversation about what I think parallels what we saw with COVID as far as the nefarious behavior. Would that be a fair statement, Randy Bach?
Well, thank you for the fabulous introduction. I want everyone to know I'm not all that amazing. I'm a primary care doctor. I've done a few things. I've tried a few things. I've succeeded at some. I'm a long-term primary care physician in the Boston, Massachusetts area, and right now I'm working for a private clinic. During the course of the lockdowns and so forth, I had probably time on my hands, as a lot of us did, to introspect. I was not one of the frontline doctors treating COVID at the time, and our clinic was a little bit quiet. Anyway, so I started looking into the last great pandemic. Now, I've spent a little time on that. What question would you like me to first address?
Well, it's one of these things that, you know, you elected to, and because of the fact you're in Massachusetts, which I don't want to get into this political tit for tat thing, because the last time I mentioned red states and blue states, I got my butt chewed out off microphone by one of our guests. And, you know, but the thing is that everybody in the United States has been programmed vis-a-vis the media for the last 2.5 years into believing that the liberal states, there's more problems there because of the way they're behaving versus the red states versus the lack of problems because of the way they're behaving. So, you know, I'm looking at comparisons, and you started looking at Zika and addressing it as a pandemic that never was in your new book. I guess I could ask you, you know, what prompted you to actually write this book and use the parallels in COVID?
Well, there's a couple different questions embedded there. I'm going to just take a first stab, and you'll try to, you know, bring me back if I
digress too far off. Yeah.
Fair enough. So I'm going to take a stab at the, you know, why is this general practice doctor in Massachusetts looking at Zika? And then I started looking at it before we knew there was going to be a COVID pandemic, before anyone had heard of the term or made up the term COVID. And frankly, you know, I kind of owe it, well, partly to my own kind of like silly, in a sense, curiosity. It's never really stopped. It's probably not silly. But back when Zika microcephaly came out, I was like, I'd heard of Zima, that kind of weird alcohol drink. And Zika, I mean, I'd been to medical school and I'd stayed awake for most of it. I'd never heard of Zika, and all of a sudden they're saying Zika microcephaly, and I was like, so I spent a little time, looking up what Zika was, and it's apparently like a very close, it's almost like a brother or sister to dengue, and people may or may not have heard of that. That's a pretty prominent fever, it's called bone break fever, and it's in the tropics, and it's transmitted by a mosquito called Aedes aegypti, named after Egypt, who's from Africa, and kind of came over with the slave trade. To Brazil and so forth, along with dengue, which is probably African native, as is Zika. And so I was a little bit puzzled by that, because dengue, you know, there are tens of millions of cases worldwide per year, and there are a million or so per year in Brazil, and there's never been any association with microcephaly. And there was an article in the Wall Street Journal that kind of puzzled me. One of the founders of this theory, Zika causing microcephaly, there's a doctor named Vanessa Vanderlyn Mota, and she and her family, they're all neuropediatricians in what I call Recife. Apparently the Brazilians pronounce it Recife. I'm going to stick with Recife on the map, northeast Brazil. And they, but her eureka moment, as it were, was that she had saw two fraternal twin babies, and one was completely normal, and the other one had a small head. Now, small head is not a diagnosis per se. It's an observation. It's like small ears, small nose. And some of those things are insignificant, but a small head usually means small brain, and that's going to be severe mental issues and lack of, you know, development over time. And it's a tragic thing because it's not reversible and so forth. I mean, some of them may be borderline normal as far as cognitive abilities, but a lot of them are not. And so this was a big deal. And by the time we heard about it in February 2016, it had become kind of a declared worldwide pandemic per the WHO, and there were travel restrictions. It was coincident with the Rio, mind you, they say Rio de Janeiro. Who knew? I always thought it was Rio, but Rio, Brazilians say. And so there was going to be upheavals to the Olympics. No, don't go, don't travel, don't do this, don't do that. And there's still pregnant women, particularly warmer areas in the United States and around the world, are given warnings to stay indoors, to slather on insect repellent day by day by day during pregnancy. And you can imagine the guilt somebody might have if they have a mosquito bite and or if they wind up having a small-headed baby. Now, the small-headed babies per se is not a new thing. That's been through the history of mankind. I mean, other species we don't really see small-headed squirrels or small-headed bear and whatnot, because they don't care for their young if they can't survive. But in humans we do, because, you know, we have, you know, nursing homes, we have other kind of care facilities for young people and whatnot. Anyway, so we will see microcephaly, we'll care for those babies. But anyway, I kind of the her eureka moment was like almost the opposite of my eureka moment. I was like, well, why does it have to be, if one's normal and the other's not, why is that an infection? Wouldn't they both be infected? And then moreover, if she did want to find an infection from that little piece of non-evidence, why have it be a brand new virus? There are already viruses that are loosely associated with small-headed babies. Mind you, there's like 30 to 50 different like minor things that nobody really knows what brings it about. There's, you know, drugs or pesticides or a whole bunch of things. So there's no real cause. There's no real firm disease in this category. Anyway, I just put a little thing on Facebook. I kind of shelved it. Didn't think about it at all. And the miracle of Facebook, one of the miracles, and, you know, we have our problems with it, but sometimes there are good things with it, is that like 3 years later it poked me and said, oh, you know, 3 years ago you wrote this. And so I had all of a sudden the 3 years distance from the event to see what happened. And again, Google, and apparently it had disappeared. I had not heard much about it, and I'm sure nobody here has really been thinking much about Zika microcephaly in the meanwhile. Even in Brazil, they've kind of stopped thinking about it. And so I started looking and hunting, and I thought it was real a puzzlement. And the more I dug, the more I thought it was kind of a base of like cotton candy on top of whipped cream and so forth. There was a lot of fluffy, not really quite facts that the whole thing was based upon. And the more I inspected it, the more the rationale disappeared. So I came up with a short article, like 800 words. I wanted it to be in like the Wall Street Journal or, you know, whatever. And about this disappearance. And I thought there was a lot of shakiness about it and a kind of shoddy absence of what we call science. I mean, it's called science, but not everything is. And all well and good. You know, I almost got it published at the it's called JAMA, J-A-M-A, the Journal of the American Medical Association. And so that's like one of the top two or three journals on earth medically. And I was really, you know, proud and pleased with myself. And I was on a Zoom call with the erstwhile two chief editors of the publication. There was Dr. Howard Bauschner and Dr. Edward Livingston, I presume. And so they went on a call with me, and Dr. Livingston had kind of thought of having the call because he found my facts, as it were, my observation or my analysis, I don't know, strong enough to be in his magazine. And that was great. And so I was like all set, and I was really happy. And he said, but, you know, it's always a but. But you know, we would publish this, and we really think it's important stuff. And it doesn't look like Zika, you know, is back and is not coming back. And you're probably, you know, there's a good chance you're right. But this would sow doubt in the public health establishment. And we have this new pandemic coming around. This is early 2020, COVID. And we don't want people to doubt the public health establishment, the CDC and the WHO, and your, you know, if we let out your information, people will start to think they can be wrong. I'm like, well, everybody can be wrong. I mean, you could be
imagine
wrong about
that.
You could be wrong about saying what you're saying. I might be wrong about my Zika theory. Fine, but I thought you ran like a science journal that is into debate and science. And you know, I didn't know you were running a political coverage. You know, I'm not sure these are my precise words, but basically that's what I said. Anyway, I'm gonna come up for air. So that's kind of how I got interested in the topic. I'll leave you this one thought. So when he said that, I tried to get it in other journals like the New England Journal and Science and Nature and a whole bunch of newspapers and TV. What I sent out a spreadsheet of, you know, interest letters, you know, like 50 to 100 or whatever. I came back with pretty much zeros. I got it published in a small kind of political journal, American Greatness, which is awesome. But it's not the same as you know, it didn't get the same viewership. But at that point, when he told me that and we were done with that call, I was a little bit what's the word for ticked off? You know, whatever. I was a little bit peeved, and I thought, yeah, you know,
we say the word pissed on this show. So
yeah,
I mean, I get it.
But
I get it.
And so I just said, you know, whatever the thing, like a screw into a wall, I said, do that to them. I'm just going to write the book, and it's going to be up there, and then they're going to not look that great down the road. So I spent a lot of time. I spent almost a year and a half writing this book, and I did, you know, I think – I mean, I mostly sat on my derriere here, you know, I've never been to Brazil. I don't speak Portuguese, and I'm not an infectious disease guy. I'm not a tropical medicine guy, and I've never seen a case of Zika. I've never seen a case of microcephaly. But, you know, my childhood hero was Sherlock Holmes. And I think, you know, when there's a case there and there's an answer, it should be uncovered. Otherwise, you've got the wrong guy and so forth. And I'm into kind of, you know, I grew up with Superman, you know, American justice, you know, justice in the American way, and Sherlock Holmes finding the case. So that's kind of how, that's my long, long answer. I apologize to how I got involved in this.
Well, and given the fact that this happened and you were snubbed by the American Medical Association's journals.
Yes.
It's like elementary, my dear Watson. You know, you just had to write this book. And of course, you basically, I mean, when you start pointing out and you're attacking Fauci, that means you're attacking science. And then we find out that Dr. Deborah Birx puts out a tell-all book. And we don't want anybody, we've been discouraging everybody from buying that book, because we don't want her making any money off selling that book, given the fact she lied to Trump, she lied to the American people, she put these protocols in place that basically now she's admitting were wrong, they were deliberately wrong, there was no 15 days to slow the spread, she admitted that. Once she figured out how to slow the spread and they bought into the 15-day thing, how can I extend it? And it was all about a power grab. And that's what all this has been about, is restricting people's liberties. Did you actually, Dr. Bach, did you actually see any kind of a parallel in liberty restriction with the Zika virus that you did with this?
So there's two different answers. I'm going to just
I know. Schools of thought. I get it.
Right. Well, I'm gonna kind of leave Zika for what it is. I'm gonna let people make their own analogies and extensions. But Zika is not COVID, and it took place in a different sphere. It took place in Brazil. But I will say this, and I mentioned this to you in the break, that I am not a conspiracy guy, but I think there is oftentimes a conspiracy of interest. That is, when something happens, it's kind of like if you drop an ice cream cone, there's going to be a conspiracy of ants that come along and flies or whatever that all of a sudden have a common interest in your ice cream cone having fallen. They didn't necessarily make you, you know, drop it. And the fact that you dropped it doesn't mean you like ants and flies and doesn't mean you want to dirty up the world. It could just have happened. But at that moment, ants and flies are happy, and maybe the cleaning guy's not happy. So everything that happens winds up having a division of who's interested in having more of that. So if flies could or ants could make you drop more ice cream cones, they would do it. They don't necessarily have that power, and some of it's just going to be an ice cream cone dropping. So in Brazil's case, I think that this, you know, became a bigger thing than it could have and should have been because of a conspiracy of interest. In Brazil's case, you know, you've talked about depopulation. I think the conspiracy of interest in the case of Zika microcephaly was for the pro-abortion forces in Latin America to get a foot in the door. In good part of Latin America, it's Catholic countries historically, and abortion is illegal completely. And Brazil is one of those countries. It's kind of like ground zero for the pro-abortion forces. And when Zika microcephaly came along, all of a sudden there was an opening, like we need emergency injunctions so we could have automatic abortions for anybody who might have been around a mosquito. That's pretty much the entire population of Brazil, because any woman might have been around a mosquito. And they had no Zika testing. They had no firm way of discerning a microcephaly in utero in first trimester, second, whatever. So this would be an open door to basically widespread legalization, complete legalization of abortion for the, you know, on an emergency basis. But that emergency basis, according to public health officials, could be years until, quote unquote, until we get a vaccine. You might have heard that phrase before. So so in this case, there were going to be injunctions, and there were some from state by state in Brazil to allow abortions on a temporary basis. What kind of percolated up to their Supreme Court, and again, I'm not an expert on the Brazilian judiciary or this issue per se, but that was kind of one of the conspiracy of interest. So the ice cream cone dropped, and all of a sudden everyone is racing towards it and hoping the ice cream, you know, more ice cream cones fell, or this one did not get picked up. Worldwide, you know, I think there is, you know, Eisenhower mentioned the military-industrial complex, and I do think that there are other aspects of that. You know, I kind of think on a personal basis, I used to do drug narcotic detox treatment for people. I think there's, in a sense, like a methadone industrial complex. And I also think there's like a research funding science industrial complex. And this gets fed upon, and again, I'm not a conspiracy guy, but I think it's obvious that, you know, people in government in the public health sector can make a pandemic, and then all of a sudden there's, you know, money gets poured into it, $1 billion for Zika, for instance, in 2016. And then there's a lot of people who were never Zika specialists before because there was no Zika at all worldwide. There has never been a single human case of Zika illness, you know, ever mentioned until 2015 or so. But now there's a lot of money. Everyone can become a Zika expert. And once they are, it's unlikely for them to say, oh, whoops, you know what? Zika microcephaly is not really a thing. It's never coming back. We haven't seen any other cases. And here's your money back. Thank you so much. Why don't you go build bridges in Iowa? This doesn't happen in government. We kind of think we pour our tax money in there, but there's a fair amount of, you know, internecine tensions about who's going to get, you know, your hard-earned dollars for their efforts.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons a lot of people are just averse to paying taxes now and continue to be that way because they don't trust government. Now, here's the thing. One of the things you point out in the book, Zika never actually got a vaccine, but amazing how Operation Warp Speed came into play and all of a sudden out of nowhere, and they covered up the trials. And they didn't want to tell you about all the people who died and all the people that got injured. But yet we have to have this vaccine out there. And again, they lied to Trump. I'm totally convinced of it because Deborah Birx just flat out admitted it. And everybody was relying on them to do the right thing. And instead, they put a vaccine out that is, I mean, look at the hell that is causing in America right now. And all we have, because the CDC has admitted lying to us about the statistics and the VAERS system, only reports like 1% of the total injuries and deaths ever, because doctors don't have the time to spend 30 minutes filling out for each one. And then Israel is the only study we have right now to show that people that have been injected and boosted multiple times are getting COVID. And they told us you'll never get COVID if you get the shot. And right. And all of a sudden now people are dropping dead. People I know got their second dose 4 days later, they're dead. And so I'm just like, okay, you know, this is what got us started. So anyway, hopefully you'll stay with us here the break.
Yep.
We'll continue this conversation with Dr. Randy Bach. We will be back on the Power Hour, and we'll take your phone calls, too, if any you have, after this break. Stay with us.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. When talking of great immune support, a line of products comes to my mind. That's North American Urban Spice. We carry the Rest Vital Calf, Sinew Orega, Oreganol Juice, Purely C, Chaga Max, Collagen Power Plus, Oregares, Super Strength Oregano Oil, Black Seed, and many more. Support small businesses when you buy from the good guys. Go to thepowermall.com or call 877-817-9829.
This craft that the Strauss family had of recognizing the medicinal value of herbs by taste and then putting formulas together, knowing the herbal ingredients they needed, but putting them together in perfect proportion by taste, just like a chef would, the Strauss Heart Drops, the world-famous Strauss Heart Drops that saved my life, Jim Strauss's and many others, my dad, my list goes on and on. But those Heart Drops, they were developed, created 40 years ago for Jim himself after a heart attack. Now, this formula fixed my high blood pressure over 20 years ago, and I have had great blood pressure since.
Call Jay at 877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at theparamall.com. That's theparamall.com.
Thirty-two minutes after the hour of 12 noon, Monday, August 15, 2022. Dave Krieger with you in Central Time here on the Power Hour. Welcome back. And, of course, we've been on the phone the last segment with Randy Bach. We're going to continue this conversation, of course. He has a book out called Overturning Zika, the Pandemic That Never Was. And, of course, you know, we were talking before the break about this vaccine. They call it a vaccine, yet when you look at the patents, they are referred to as gene therapy experimental drugs. They were never given vaccine status. They were called emergency use authorization drugs. People bought into it because of fear, and we have what we have. Chance in West Virginia, you're on the phone with Randy Bach. Go ahead.
Yes, hello, gentlemen. I've heard, Dave, I don't know if it was on your show or another show, I'm getting older, my memory's not what it used to be, that they have supposedly 9 pandemics down the pike. I mean, have you heard about this? Do they plan on putting us through this ritual indefinitely in the future?
Well, I know monkeypox, they want to make it a pandemic, but unfortunately the CDC has been warning gay men to stay out of the bathhouses and stop going to raves and having sex with people. And if you're going to have sex, at least wear a body condom and stand 6 feet apart. Yeah, like that's going to happen. No, I've not, other than monkeypox. I know Dr. Brian Artis has been on the show before, and he's warned people that come November, we're going to have a major situation going on. But past that point, Chance, I really have not heard anything other than what you've heard.
Well, that's what I've heard. So apparently we got to look forward to Pox's 2 through 10, I guess. I don't know. It's really getting bizarre.
Randy wants to comment on that.
Well, Chance,
yes, sir.
Interesting question. I mean, obviously, you know, of all the things difficult to predict, the future is the hardest. So I don't think that we would necessarily know which ones are coming down the pike. What I worry about, and I actually have an article I'm hoping to get published in the next couple of days. It's called COVID-22, which is a term I didn't quite make up, but I made it up myself, but I saw somebody else had as well. It's not impossible. But the point of the article is that what we have now in terms of Omicron, it's not even really related genetically. It's not a great-grandson of COVID-19. But we still have the name COVID-19 around. So I'm not worried about the next 5, 6, 7, 8 pandemics. I'm worried about this one and the fact that we are continuing it by using the wrong word, by purposefully, in government's case, and you know, the CDC and whatnot, using the term COVID-19. Like President Biden recently, quote unquote, came down with COVID-19. That's what all the newspapers and so forth say. He didn't. He came down with a case of coronavirus that we're calling COVID-19. Coronaviruses are the second most, if you could disappear your memory of COVID, and I wish we could, and went back to the ancient days of 2017 and just went to a textbook and looked up coronavirus, you'd find that it says, oh, the second most common cause of common cold. Okay, and that's what they've always been. Now, how did they get there? Well, they probably got there historically the way COVID got here, you know, from animals and whatnot. And once it was in animals, it could be like a wolf and very dangerous because it has its own sanctuary. But once it's with us, it's more like a poodle because it has to domesticate and not knock over people too much. So what we've gotten through the various mutations and whatnot, we get a milder and milder version of coronavirus, which essentially is the common cold. So the one we have now, Omicron, probably just is something that we would have thought as a common cold, but now we have all these COVID tests. We call it COVID-19. And the problem with that is that, and the reason they do it, in my view, the reason I think they do it is because they can keep this thing, the EUA, the emergency use authorization, in place, which gives blanket liability protection for the vaccine. And the vaccine is a good moneymaker for Pfizer and Moderna, and then down the road for candidates who have supported Pfizer and Moderna. So that's kind of the conspiracy cycle I see, which is that, you know, our public health establishment keeps this name in place, which acts as a blanket and also could, you know, act as an election type of, you know, kind of, what's the word, lever, I guess, as it did in the last one, and then we can make a new emergency. So until COVID-19 gets kind of pulled back like a Band-Aid, you know, you got to rip it off and move on. Zika, the good thing about Zika microcephaly is, you know, even the WHO no longer calls it a pandemic, and it's not there, it's not active. So there's no travel restrictions, there's no Zika passports, there's no Zika vaccine, so forth. But so they've kind of put that to rest. But COVID-19 has not been fully put to rest. Even in Philadelphia today or yesterday, they announced that they're going to mask up under 5-year-olds. Now, I don't know why under 5-year-olds are going to school to begin with, but so be it. But 3 to 5-year-olds in part of Philadelphia preschools are going to be masked for this upcoming school year. Craziness. And so this is all because they are still on COVID-19, which they think is a thing probably far worse than it was. But even so, their EUA, that extra superpower they have, is because we keep calling it COVID-19. So we have to stop, in my view. We could call it Corona 22 or common Corona, whatever. You come up with the name, but it should be something that's not COVID-22. Excuse me, not COVID-19.
It's all a matter of semantics. I hate using their vocabulary, too, to tell you the truth, because I know it's a bunch of BS. But, you know, it amazes me. It blows my mind how they've gotten away with this for so long, pulling this on the people. And that's why when I heard Pox's number 2 through 10, if you may, I'm saying, oh, God, again, we're going to go through this again over and over like a ritual, a never-ending ritual.
Well, this has only been going on as far as humanity. I mean, you know, if you look at any history textbook, the Bible, whatever, there's warring factions. There are people like power. You know, power is an aphrodisiac, and it's power. And so people are always trying to take it, and it's up to, you know, the rest of us to kind of, you know, fight. I mean, I think Franklin said, you know, it's a republic if you can keep it. That doesn't mean, you know, we kind of get this, you know, thing we can just kind of put in the corner called a republic and then look at it now and then and maybe water it once a month like my aloe plant or something like that. It's something you have to nurture and protect. Yeah. And I think that, you know, the only good news about this is that maybe some of these pandemics and so forth make us realize that we have faults in our system and we have to kind of, you know, keep an eye on them. And I think it's worse, frankly, in Australia and Canada and a lot of the, you know, what our allies in the – you know, we thought it's just all democracies, but parliamentary systems actually have it worse than we do, because they just flip completely. Oh, yeah. When their parliament goes one way, the whole place does. And so fortunately, we have 50 states, and if we can keep a federalist system where the states act as a little bit of firewall to some of the bad ideas, so be it.
Well, and Chance, if it's any consolation, Chance, we just got verification. Of course, through the Epoch Times, which, of course, they're all part of the media that keeps pushing this narrative. Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla has just tested positive for COVID-19. So if that's any consolation to you.
Well, that's interesting.
I don't know if I believe that. I think they might be just throwing these stories out there just to let us think that, hey, look, the big guys get it too. That's what I think that's all about. I don't trust anything that comes out of their mouth anymore. Well,
thank you for taking my call now. God bless you, sir. Appreciate that. Sherry in Kansas, you're on the phone with Dr. Bach. Go for it.
Yes. Dr. Bach, I remember during this whole Zika thing, some of the alternative researchers that weren't buying the party line were saying things like, I don't know if it was, you know, they were questioning that they had started giving pregnant women vaccines or if it was, seems like there was something they were doing environmentally that was new, and I'm not sure. I can't remember exactly what that was. Did you find anything like that in your research?
Well, again, Zika is mostly a phenomenon. Zika microcephaly was a Brazil phenomenon. And mind you, even when, the year they had it, they actually didn't have any Zika tests. So it was really just the scientists, these researchers, that kind of made a name for themselves. I think they profited by it in their careers and whatnot, and the populace suffered. But it didn't really quite reach the United States. So let me get to your other point here. So as far as the vaccine, there has not been a Zika vaccine, but there was money allotted for it. Like $500 million was given to the NIAID, Dr. Fauci's realm, to go get one. And they didn't use the term, but they thought they were going to do a kind of a warp speed kind of thing and have one within a year. And again, places throughout Latin America were told not to have children for the duration. You know, lots of health ministers of various states within Brazil and various countries through Latin America and in the tropics told their own populace, stop having kids. And in Brazil, frankly, there's kind of a what I call a ghost bubble of about 150,000 absences of children. The population went down by that number because that many people presumably listened and did not have children. So the normal birth rate went down precipitously in Brazil at the time. But as far as the vaccine, it's an interesting side story you bring up, because, you know, this money was like burning a hole, you know, I think, in the researchers' pocket, and they couldn't get a vaccine. So they said, oh, well, you know what, Brazil, in 2018, mind you, Zika had long gone, and Brazil had not acknowledged this, and there were no more cases of microcephaly. Once they had good standards for what microcephaly was and wasn't, and once they actually had a Zika test, they didn't find any Zika, and they didn't find any Zika microcephaly. They didn't find any increase in microcephaly at all. Just like there hadn't been previous years, and there may not have even been in 2015. But leaving all that stuff aside, so they said, well, we're going to go get a vaccine. And so Brazil's version of the FDA, mind you, they're going to get money from us, hundreds of millions of dollars, to do these studies. They said, you know what, thank you, thanks, but no thanks. And Dr. Fauci pushed it. They had their own ethics panel in the United States that they said, can we do a human challenge? Can we infect people with Zika? And the ethics panel here, sponsored by Walter Reed, said no. No, you cannot. This is not a severe enough illness. You can protect against mosquitoes. Do not infect people with Zika. And so they didn't for a while. But when they still hadn't gotten the vaccine, they still had the money, they said, well, we'll do it in Brazil. And Brazil was smart enough at this point to say, thanks, but no thanks. Keep your money. Go away. We don't want this. And so actually right now, and I have an article in the Washington Examiner called the Zika Vaccine That Never Was. You can – I'll maybe give a link. But basically, right now in Baltimore, the NIAID is infecting American women, with Zika in order to help build a Zika vaccine. And so it kind of brings up the question, it's either one of two things. Either Zika is so dangerous we need a vaccine, in which case you shouldn't be injecting women with it, you know, potentially pregnant and whatnot, or it's so benign that you don't need a vaccine. I mean, and you could inject people because it's a nothing virus. So either one of those things means you shouldn't be doing it, you know. But that's what we're spending our money on right now. There's a doctor, if you want to write to her and ask. Her name is Anna Durbin, D-U-R-B-I-N, and she is connected with NIAID, and she's at the Baltimore – I think it's Bloomberg School of Public Health in Baltimore, Johns Hopkins.
How many of these –
Yeah,
just
I remember
out of curiosity,
people saying that, you know – Really, the incidence of this small head thing wasn't anymore, and I agree with you. I think they were just trying to promote depopulation. But, you know, this whole deal about giving women any kind of vaccine during pregnancy, I'm not sure when that started. I was alarmed when I heard they were doing that because I've heard some real horror stories of women losing their amniotic fluid.
I don't think anybody's
That actually happened to my granddaughter.
I don't think anybody goes out of their way to recommend a vaccine during pregnancy. I'm not saying that Dr. Durbin's doing that in this case.
Oh, they do.
I've not heard that. No, I think people mostly want to make sure you're not pregnant before they vaccinate you. Even with the Zika vaccine trial, which I'm opposed to, I think they're being very careful about pregnancy. But
No, I'm talking about any kind of vaccine. I'm talking about that they give the DPT or some kind of, they give flu shots now when women are pregnant. And, of course, you see how they never tried the COVID vaccine on pregnant women, but they were giving it to them afterwards.
That's a good point. I'd have to look that one up. I'm not familiar that they're giving the coronavirus vaccine to pregnant women. I personally would abjure, hold off from giving vaccines to pregnant women. A lot of them, like I'm reasonably in favor of the rubella vaccine, which is given before anybody's pregnant and shouldn't be given during pregnancy, because that rubella actually has what they say about Zika. Rubella does actually have a congenital neurologic component, and it would be very useful to get chickenpox. German measles before when you're young. When we were kids, we had German measles parties and chickenpox parties so that we would get that young when we wouldn't get sick and then have a full immunity, natural immunity. But insofar as people, don't do that anymore, mind you, I think as a total sideline, I think there could have been coronavirus parties for young healthy people, and frankly, probably that happens at college, with keggers and whatnot. Getting people to have good, full, natural immunity from coronavirus was a better plan than keeping people away from each other waiting for a vaccine. So I think the vaccine probably had reasonable audience in amongst the elderly, the very elderly, the nursing home population, and people with significant comorbidities. But amongst the healthy populace, coronavirus is not that bad an illness, even in its earliest ancestral phase, which is the most dangerous.
Well, I'm not for vaccines, but I don't discount the frequency component of this. I think that's a component of this whole deal, because what they do during the thing is they rolled out all the 5G while they were making us stay inside. So anyway.
All right. Well, I appreciate that, Sherry. And the thing is that, to embellish what was just said here, the COVID-19 vaccines post release were actually given to pregnant women, and we have reports that have come in here from doctors who have been on our show that have said that they've had miscarriages, they've had stillbirths, postmenopausal women are all of a sudden bleeding, things are happening to their bodies they cannot explain. But a lot of people, I think, at this juncture, I don't think that a lot of these, I think there were like 964 cases originally reported to VAERS. But post any of that, I think the number is greater. But I think that the fear factor basically pushed everybody to go run to the nearest pharmacy where they were told that, these are safe and effective, when they knew they weren't. And because they're all shielded from any kind of liability. And this is the first I've heard when you mentioned this, Dr. Bach, about them testing this stuff in Baltimore. That's a first. I had not read that anywhere, that they were testing it in a lab, trying to create a virus for something that basically now you're saying that it wasn't to the pandemic stage and really isn't there. Why do they need a virus other than the fact they just want to blow more taxpayer money?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the vaccine, not the virus, but
yeah, the vaccine.
Yeah. I mean, I can't answer that because it's somebody else. I did have an email conversation with Dr. Durbin on this topic, and she was kind enough to write back and forth with me because I was telling her, my worries about it. She is of the impression, what I call kind of the locust theory of Zika, that because it hasn't been around, means it's going to come back. I kind of think that if something's not around, it's not there. But she thinks it's going to come back in a decade from the original one. So, she'll be proved wrong in the upcoming years. But in the meanwhile, she's maintaining this theory that it's going to come by around every 10 to 12, 15 years, whatever, which is kind of an open-ended thing. There's no real rationale for that. I don't think she nor anybody else, frankly, has looked at the overall aspect of the data such as I have. And there even in Brazil, there were retrospective studies of microcephaly. Again, I think I mentioned that. Well, I'll just give this tiny little bit of my book, which is that the Zika microcephaly theory rests on three legs of a stool. One is the Zika, which had never been in the Americas at all, zero cases, never been seen in Brazil ever, and is a pretty much the twin of dengue. It's kind of like the monkey version of what we have as dengue. So it's kind of monkey dengue. But it never caused a single human illness. All of a sudden did, and it was in Brazil. That was in April of 2015, and that was leaked to the press in advance of anybody doing any studies, and there was some resistance in Brazil from their own institutions. Then you've kind of fast forward to the next couple months, I think August, September, some women in Recife thought they saw more cases of microcephaly. What did that mean? It meant like 13 cases instead of 7 for the whole city, or 20 instead of 10. It was a very small number of a very rare problem, and it was not like pandemic. It wasn't like thousands of cases. And that and they connected, as it turns out, in the next few weeks with somebody from Part A who thought there was Zika. And so he said, oh, there's new Zika in Brazil, and this is a new thing, microcephaly. Oh, they have to be connected. And how did he know that? Well, he called up women who had had microcephalic babies and asked them, at any point during pregnancy, did you have a fever, rash, or chills? And this is Brazil. I mean, I don't think anybody goes through pregnancy without some fever, rash, or chills. They all said yes. He says, oh, therefore it's Zika. Not a single Zika test, not a single really assessment of those babies themselves. He didn't examine them, so forth. And then that got leaked to the press also. And as soon as this happened, you know, people being what they are, the press being what it is, and the conspiracy of interest, such as I mentioned before, this just became a huge, enormous thing. I don't think Dr. Durbin or anybody else, Dr. Fauci, who spent, you know, clamored for our billions of dollars for treating this problem, which wasn't even on U.S. soil, I don't think any of them understood the flimsiness of the quote-unquote evidence such as it was and the absence of science. So when they did retrospective studies on this topic and they look back and using firmer standards, actual measurement standards, contemporary, you know, worldwide standards of what was and was not a small head, and based on the population being a smaller Indian population, a lot of large extent, so forth. Once they actually looked more closely at it, they didn't really find any microcephaly, even in that quote-unquote pandemic year of 2015. They certainly haven't found it in 2016 or beyond, and they didn't find it in Colombia, Venezuela, or any other, the Guyana kind of countries in the northeast of South America, or anywhere else, frankly. And they've looked. You know, in India, they had what they thought was Zika. And mind you, Zika is really almost impossible to differentiate on a chemical basis from dengue. But so be it. They want to call it Zika, fine. Once they thought they found Zika in Rajasthan in 2018 in India, they found no microcephaly associated. And they found it no microcephaly associated anywhere else on Earth. The people at the time, they were predicting 1 million extra worldwide cases of microcephalic babies. That's a huge tragedy for one, let alone a million. And it's never happened. And nobody's apologized. Nobody's come back and said, you know, this is one less thing for which you have to worry. And that's the part that bothers me. You know, that the public health establishment only goes in one direction. They're like a train going, I don't know, off a cliff. They can't turn back, and they can't stop, and they can't apologize.
Well, that's the one thing that we definitely have seen the parallel in COVID and all of that, too. You never hear Burks or anybody apologize because 15 days to slow the spread and mask mandates and all the other stuff, social distancing. Oh, you have to stand 6 feet apart. Is there, you know, anybody that's been on YouTube that has actually seen the video of a sneeze in slow motion?
No, you're absolutely right about that.
I'm looking at this stuff going, yeah. Doc, come on. Yeah. This doesn't make any sense.
We're all in the same soup. And you know, they have often mistaken themselves. I think Lord Acton said, you know, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Correct.
And people in power, they start to believe their own, you know, they have so many yes men / women around them that when they say something, you know, people, they say jump, people just say how high. Nobody questions anything and they get used to it and they get in this whole, you know, kind of like, I don't know, like we'll call it an elite. Where they're getting favors, they're getting favored for what they say, and nobody contradicts them. Because to contradict them would put you in the out group where you're not going to get the tokens and the rewards. This is the whole concept of Hans Christian Andersen's The Emperor's New Clothes. You know, everybody, you know, loves, you know, some tailors sold the emperor no clothing for, you know, a lot of money. And he was convinced this is the best clothing. And nobody says anything about it except how beautiful it is, because they are part of the coterie. They're part of the royal crowd. And they're getting favors. Why would they want to insult the emperor? And it's a little boy on the outside who has no investment who points this out. And so we all have to, you know, be that little boy and point out when the emperor's not wearing any clothing. And Dr. Birx, you know, she wore maybe a little too much clothing with that scarf. But, you know, I assume she didn't, you know, interrupt you know, any circulatory issues. But I think that they all understood they were doing this for something bigger and better, and that they're using medicine as a proxy for politics. You know, the root word of, you know, the public health, you know, the word public is actually the same Latin root as politics, publius, the people. And so, you know, to think that public health is science is a mistake. You know, the actual term of science is two different things. One is science is the body of knowledge. But the other one is that science is a scientific process, which is always verifiable by experimentation. And insofar as we've been able to experiment certain things, it's hard with an active pandemic, as it were. But insofar as state by state, you know, Florida did better than New York. North Dakota, I think it was South Dakota, did better than North Dakota. One of the Dakotas had masks, the other one didn't. And the one without masks did just as well with much less damage. You know, places that stayed open have done better. You were pointing about red state, blue state kind of thing. And this is, you know, the natural kind of crucible, the experimentation we are have been, you know, benefited. We've been the beneficiaries of the United States insofar as we have independent states, as it were, that can do experimentation.
Right. And they have obviously used us as guinea pigs throughout this entire thing, because people right now, Dr. Bach, are having a very difficult time trusting modern medicine. At least that's what my callers are telling me. It's been a pleasure having you on the show, sir. We're completely out of time. Dave Prieger with you. And the name of the book is Overturning Zika, the Pandemic That Never Was. If you want to get a copy of it, you know where to find it. In the meantime, God bless you and God bless the United States of America.
All heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.